And joining us by phone this morning, District 3 Senator Tom Bach. He's the new state Senate Majority Leader, and he joins us by phone. First of all, congratulations on your position, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Now, DFL is back in the majority. What are the pressing issues next session, as far as you're concerned?
Well, the most pressing thing has been kind of been kicked down the road for about 10 years. under 8 years of Governor Plenty, and now 2 years of a Republican legislature, and we just have not addressed the state's structural budget problems. And I hope to be able to put together a very honest budget. I think Minnesotans deserve that, this notion that we can balance our budget by increasing property taxes and borrowing from our schools is, I don't think, what most Minnesotans want to see.
Where are we in terms of the size of the deficit?
Well, we'll get a new number on December 5th. On December 5th, we'll get something called the November budget forecast. And then the governor will base his next two-year budget off of that, submit it to the legislature by the 15th of January, I believe. And then in February, it's called the February forecast, but just like November 1, it'll come the first week of March. We'll get the most up-to-date revenue and spending numbers from our economic forecaster. And then in the 1st of March, the legislature will drill down with the most current numbers, start working on a new two-year budget. Currently today, the deficit for the next biennium is about $1.1 billion. And in addition to that, just nominal inflation in the state budget, which is largely driven by additional health care spending, is almost $1 billion more. So the deficit we actually have to deal with is about $2.1 billion. And that assumes we're not going to pay schools back the more than $2 billion that we owe them. So if you think we owe schools the money we borrowed from them, the deficit's over $4 billion. But you can't raise that kind of revenue. You can't make those kind of cuts. So what we're going to have to figure out is how we get schools on some kind of a repayment plan. The legislature make a commitment annually for the next several bienniums to get schools paid back the money that was borrowed from them under this Republican leadership.
Well, now, you mentioned a minute ago about health care costs. The state is in the process of setting up a new health care system, as mandated by the Affordable Care Act. And we seem to be one of the few that are planning to do anything about it on our own. What role does the legislature play in that?
Well, a significant one. Wednesday after the election, when I was over at the Capitol, I had a meeting with the governor, and then after that I had a little time before I had another meeting, so I actually walked through we call it Senate Council. It's our nonpartisan attorneys that actually do all of our bill drafting. And when I walked into the office where our Health and Human Service attorneys are that do the drafting for statutory changes for health care, they said, "Oh, we are really glad to see you." They said, "The governor is so far ahead of the legislature on this health exchange because the Republicans rolled the dice last year that somehow Mitt Romney was going to win the election and then the Affordable Care Act would have been repealed." And I just never understood it because it wasn't going to be repealed even if Mitt Romney had won the election. But so they've put us way behind the administration in this, and we have to have an operating exchange up, I believe, by October. And if we don't, we're going to default to the federal system, which is what Wisconsin, Scott Walker in Wisconsin, had decided to do, is just use the federal exchange system. But there's a lot of support in Minnesota for a state-operated insurance exchange where citizens will be able to go to the website or business will be able to go to the website and shop for their insurance policies. And even the state chamber of commerce strongly supports the state health care exchange. They think Minnesota just can do a better job of it.
Well, it's more flexible, as I understand it. I mean, you'd be able to craft something that's more flexible than just a one-size-fits-all from the federal government.
Well, correct. Absolutely correct. Yeah. We can craft some, different kinds, varying kinds of health plans that are offered to the public. So it'll serve the public much better. But we've got quite a bit of work to do at the legislature, putting in law what all of those options are going to be so that we then kind of go out for RFPs and bid for insurance companies that are going to want to participate in the exchange.
Well, now your district, or newly named district, 3, grew quite a bit after redistricting. Does this make it harder for you to represent everybody? I mean, it's quite a diverse district now, from all the way over here to over to Coochachin County.
Yeah, it was too big to physically be able to attend, you know, all the things that you want to do anyway. So, I mean, adding Coochachin County probably doesn't change that much. Coochachin County is not much different than Cook or Lake or St. Louis County. It's the same kind of economy. Wood products are a significant piece. Tourism is a significant piece. All the natural resource issues, the DNR things relative to state parks and trails and are all similar in Coochachin County as they are in the rest of the district. So, you know, it was so large already, but now it really got large. There actually are, I have a little fun fact that there are 9 states in our country actually that are smaller than the Senate district. So, yeah, even Maryland, which we don't think of as being that small a geographic state, is 500 square miles smaller than the Senate district. But, you know, I've got very, very good local government officials that I've always depended on, commissioners, counselors, school board members that I've depended on to try and advocate for the things important in the district. And I have met with Coochachin County School Board, the City Council, other county commissioners, and it's the same kind of great group of people. So I really look forward to working with them also, in addition to, and I do want to say, I am really proud of the vote that I got in Cook County. I mean, I got a higher vote percentage in Cook County than Lake or St. Louis or Coochachin, and makes me feel really good. I just have developed a lot of friends in Coochachin in Cook County over the years that I've represented them. So I want to thank everybody for the incredible support that they showed me at the polls.
Well, that's good. Now, you were, when the Republicans held the majority, you were the minority leader for the Senate. Now you're the majority leader. Personally, is that pretty much the same workload, or does that really make it harder for you?
Well, it's, you know, it's probably more work, but it's much different. I mean, as a minority leader, your job is to challenge the majority that their agenda doesn't represent the views of people. And we did that, and I worked very hard at that for 2 years to challenge them that I thought they were taking the state off track. And voters responded, and we went from, we spent a lot of money in about 14 races to show the contrast between what a Democratic Senate candidate would do versus a Republican voting record, and we were very successful at that, and went from 30 to 39 seats in the Senate. You need 34 to have control, so we have a very good working majority right now. Now my role will significantly shift to one of actually trying to set the agenda. And so it, you know, it starts with appointing all of the committee chairs, and next week we're going to start working on the committee makeups, all the different, I think we've got about 17 or 18 committees, who's going to be on the committees, where is their expertise, where are they going to be most valuable in moving issues forward for our state. And then it moves to a legislative agenda. Mm-hmm. Well, I had a very early meeting with the governor the day after the election to talk about, you know, Colin, how we were going to proceed. This is a huge responsibility. I mean, not since 1990, and actually you have to go back to the election of 1986, when voters actually voted for one-party government in Minnesota. And I think what's happened, the reason they did that is, I think they were very concerned with the direction the state was trending. And, I mean, as I analyzed the numbers, 126,000 Minnesotans voted for Mitt Romney that did not vote for a Republican for the Senate. Hmm. They dropped off. They voted for Romney, and they decided, I'm not voting for a Republican for the Senate. Now, I'm sure a lot of those people might have left the Senate race blank, but a lot of them voted for a Democrat. And I'm very humbled by that a whole lot of people in Minnesota that haven't normally voted for a Democrat for the Senate have decided to trust the reins of state government to us. And I really hope to be able to show them that one-party control serves the state better than this divided government has. You know, the Republicans really got off track when they publicly talked about compromise being a dirty word. I mean, the chair of their party talking about compromise being a dirty word. And then they made up all these little lapel pins with these shiny little pennies. And our slogan was not a penny more. You know, that nothing is important enough to raise even a penny of revenue for. And I just think that they got too far away from where mainstream Minnesotans are. And I hope to be able to listen to what Minnesotans are saying, strike a balance where we're going to have some spending reductions in the next biennium. There's no question. This hole that we're in, frankly, I hate to sound so partisan, but that the Republicans put us in, it's going to take more than one biennium to dig ourselves out of. So there's going to be some real tough decisions about additional spending reductions. We're going to have to find some revenue at a minimum to do two things. We're going to have to find some revenue to pay our schools back, the more than $2 billion that we owe them. And we're going to have to find some revenue to try and stop these escalating property tax increases. Property taxes in 2002 were $4 billion statewide. This year, they're $8.5 billion. In 10 years, they've more than doubled. And how the Republicans, with a straight face, in all those years they controlled things, says, well, we never raised taxes. We never raised taxes. We kept our faith with Minnesotans. As they totally abandoned local governments, abandoned counties, abandoned cities, abandoned our schools, forced our schools to go out and run voter-approved levies because they wouldn't spend even an additional penny on our K-12 school system. They've defunded our higher educational systems. You know, in our two-year colleges right now, we have the second highest tuition in the nation because the state has not kept up with the rising costs of providing for education. So we're seeing more and more pressure on tuition, more and more pressure on property taxes, and that's going to take a while to turn around. But I think Minnesotans rejected that agenda of theirs, and now the responsibility really falls on me as the majority leader in the Senate to try and chart a new course. And I just ask for people's input and for their patience, because this is a deep enough problem that it's going to take us a while to dig our way out of it. I know expectations are pretty high.
Well, you just answered the last two questions I was going to ask you without asking them for you, so I want to thank you. We're out of time, and we've been speaking with District 3 Senator Tom Bach, new State Senate Majority Leader. Thank you for taking your time. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you. I'd like to come on regularly during the session.
We'll try to do that, sir.
Okay, thank you.